Imagine you're sitting in a meeting room. The financial results were just shared, and they're not good. Everyone is silent. The tension in the air is so strong, you could almost cut it with a knife. Now, what if we told you that one of the best ways to break that tension and actually build your credibility is by telling a joke?
And we're not talking about a fancy story or a clever quote, but a simple, silly dad joke. Today, we're going to talk about humor, and especially this sort of light, non-threatening humor can help you lead with confidence, even in serious moments. And as an added bonus, learning to understand and tell dad jokes will really help you improve your idiomatic command of English.
Welcome to The Fluent Edge, the podcast for advanced English speakers who want to polish their language and level up their communication.
I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson. I'm an executive coach, author, and mindset strategist.
And I'm Sean Watson, your English communication coach and accent clarity specialist.
Together, we connect language and leadership so you can speak better, lead smarter, and thrive globally.
So let's start by busting a myth. That's a great expression, to bust a myth, to destroy a false conception of something. I think in some cultures, people feel like humor might not be terribly professional. What do you think about that, Howie? Can humor be used in professional settings?
It's unprofessional to not be human. Humor is one of the most disarming ways that humans have of connecting with each other. So if you think of someone who's never amused or funny, it's hard to trust that person. There are exceptions. But in general, even a smile, we code that as non-threatening, as welcoming. Your example when we came in about this meeting with all this tension, it's not like the tension is helping anything. It's not like everybody on edge and worried and afraid that they're going to get blamed is going to help the team come up with better ideas. But to be able to help everyone relax could be a beneficial skill to have. Now, that said, humor is a little bit risky. It's easier to offend people and to be unprofessional with humor than it is as a straight woman or man. And by that straight man, I don't mean sexual orientation, but in comedy, the one who sets the person up for the joke is the straight man or the straight woman. Humor does have a risky edge, but with anything else that requires skill, the payoffs can be greater.
Humor can be used as a communication tool.
Absolutely. There's a lot of movies about teams and leaderships, and there's always this terribly tense moment, and then the leader breaks the ice by telling a little joke, gets everyone laughing, and they don't become silly, and they don't forget why they're there, but it kind of gives them a chance to breathe and reconnect as human beings and be better at solving the problem.
I think some of the most memorable people I've watched on TED Talks or other talks online are the ones who bring a bit of levity into serious spaces or a bit of lightness. And I think it's not to take away from the work or to deflect from the work, but it's to connect with the people doing the work.
I think we can make a distinction between, I want to take what we're doing seriously, but I don't want to take myself seriously. A rule of thumb is if you're going to tell a joke, make yourself the butt of the joke rather than someone else. Don't be cruel. Don't blame or put down other people. But if you've done something a little bit silly, you can mention that, and that will give you credibility because people will then see that you're human. And they'll be less afraid.
A word that comes to mind for that type of humor is self-deprecating humor. Mm-hmm. When we're kind of making fun of our own shortcomings rather than pointing the finger at somebody else. And I would agree with you. I think that self-deprecating humor is definitely the way to go, especially if English is not your first language. And there's also that famous quote from Maya Angelou that says something like, I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will almost never forget how you made them feel.
I remember what people do, but it's because of how I feel in their presence. And when I think about connecting with people or making a phone call or going out, my body will tell me like, oh, like be excited about this, or this is kind of a drag. And it's always about how I anticipate feeling in their presence. Am I going to feel interesting and important and cared for? Or are they the center of the universe and I'm just there to serve their ego?
And what advice would you give to someone who feels nervous about using humor in their professional communication?
I would not start with jokes. I would just think about where you use humor in non-professional settings, how you use it. If it's just a funny story about something that happened to you, I would begin there. You don't have to become a professional comedian. You don't need people writing material for you. But the idea of humor is that it can help you be authentically yourself, especially if English isn't your first language. So one of the ways to connect over humor is to talk humorously about differences, about how people wait for the bus, or how people interact in an elevator, or whether people switch utensils while they're eating. This is all observational humor, and you don't have to have the whole toolkit. You don't need to do callbacks, and you don't need to play it out and act it out, but just to say, like, hey, when I first got here, I kept putting money into the sandwich vending machine and I kept winning. Something that points out a difference in a way that's engaging and charming.
And before we actually look at some typical jokes that we could use in professional situations, let's talk about what a dad joke really is. What is the criteria, in your opinion, for a dad joke?
Yeah, well, a dad joke is largely about the words themselves rather than the concept. So the idea of a joke, of humor, as I understand it, is like all of a sudden something unexpected happens. So the punchline of a joke is something you weren't expecting. I'll give one of the examples that we have. So my wife told me to stop standing like a flamingo, so I had to put my foot down. And you need to know two things that are completely different from each other in order to appreciate the joke. One is you need to know that the flamingos stand typically with one foot in the air. And the second you need to know is putting my foot down means to assert my authority. And so there, the phrase put your foot down is a contradiction. It means that you're obeying your wife, but it also means they're asserting their authority. At that point, the brain gets a little bit scrambled, and it's because of words, not because of birds.
And things like sarcasm are probably not a good ingredient to put into dad jokes, right? So we kind of avoid sarcasm, and it needs to remain within a safe zone of humor, especially if you're in a multicultural setting.
Yeah, sarcasm tends to be a put-down. A lot of people have said that the kernel of humor is always cruelty. And that's often true, but I don't think it always has to be true. And it doesn't have to be cruelty. It can just be delight at how language works. So another one we have is like elevator music is bad on so many levels.
I love that.
I guess if the concept of on so many different levels means different aspects, different qualities, and I'm always interested like what's funny in Spain and in Spanish and English, that there are certain phrases that do commute from one to the other, very often are positional or movement based. That seems to be quite universal.
And we can't really continue without talking about the word pun, because often dad jokes contain puns. A pun generally is like a word play. We're playing with words. I think we use two different kinds of puns most of the time. One is using words that sound alike but have different meanings. For example, if I said something like, I tried to catch some fog yesterday, I missed. So in English, mist, M-I-S-T, can be the fog or the humidity in the air that makes it hard to see. But M-I-S-S-E-D, mist, simple past of I miss something. So I try to catch some fog and I missed it. That's a homophonic where you use words that sound alike but have different meanings. And then the second one would be like a homographic pun. And that's usually a play on words that exploits a single written form with two or more meanings or pronunciations. I'll give you a good one. Time flies like an arrow. Fruit flies like a banana.
Groucho Marx. You have to say it with a fake cigar. My favorite of his, he says, outside of dog, a book is man's best friend. Inside of dog, it's too dark to read.
That's excellent. Or what's the one about the lovely evening? I've had a lovely evening, but this wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
Classic. So I think the ability to really understand puns is another way to really learn a second language in a deeper way, too. So it could be a little bit challenging at the beginning, but this could be a great way to become more flexible with your adopted language.
I'm learning that a lot in Spanish. I'm starting to notice. So I learned a word that is not your sort of everyday word. It's a contrabass, the giant cello that is taller than the person. Boom. So in Spanish, it's contrabajo. When bajo is like underneath, a low bass. So it's a contrabass, contrabajo. But of course, contrabajo also means with work.
Let's take a look at a few typical dad jokes. So this one doesn't really involve a pun, but I like this one a lot. I asked the librarian if they had any books on paranoia, and she whispered, They're right behind you. It always makes me laugh.
I do. And I'll add to that one. I asked the librarian if they had any self-help books. And she said, if I told you where they were, that would defeat the purpose.
Another one, I just finished a book about anti-gravity. It's impossible to put it down.
You can't put it down means, in English, it was a gripping story that it's full of suspense. Yeah. And yet, again, it's motion-based so that when we think about things abstractly, we almost always use physical orientation-based metaphors. I love this one. So it's a conversation. Dentist, open up, please. Me, sometimes I get sad.
That's great.
And, you know, what's the joke there?
So open up in English has a double meaning. Open up can be a literal thing. I'm opening up a box or opening up a restaurant. But to open up also means to share your feelings, to share what's going on internally for you.
This is what I really like. It's you used to be able to get air for free at gas stations, but now it's a dollar. That's inflation for you.
That's fantastic. Recently, I went to a general store and they wouldn't let me buy anything specifically. So in English, a general store is just a store that sells everything. Good. Any more?
Yeah. I'm reading a horror story in Braille. Something bad is going to happen. I can just feel it. Braille is raised bumps on paper that people can learn to read. Very often, blind people can then read books with their fingers. They can feel it.
So, you know, ballerinas are always on their toes. Why don't they just get taller ballerinas? So in English, if I'm always on my toes, that could mean that I'm reaching for something or I'm trying to make myself taller. If we say that somebody's always on their toes, the humor is logical, but it's also kind of absurd at the same time. From a mindset perspective, Howie, what's the difference between using humor as a defense mechanism versus using it strategically to build connection or to diffuse tension?
Using anything as a defense mechanism, we tend to do that without self-awareness, because when we are in defensive mode, literally the blood shunts from the prefrontal cortex down to the brainstem, down to the amygdala, to the limbic system. And I have rarely done anything wise while I'm flooded with adrenaline. And so humor in that point would be like giving me a knife. So if I feel my body, the jokes I might tell might be cruel, might be highly inappropriate. At that point, if I'm feeling myself in defensive mode, I want to practice just not saying anything, taking a breath, taking this thing seriously. Mm-hmm. And very often, I'll notice in text chats with people, they'll say something and I'll immediately think of something funny and I write it. And then I stop and I go, no, I'm not going to send that. And not even because it might be mean, but like my friend today said, oh, he's having trouble with his car. He was stressed about it. The brake fluid leaked out and the indicator light went out and he couldn't drive and he couldn't go pick up his kids. And it was a big mess. And so I immediately write, oh, I've got some black duct tape. We can cover up the light. That's going to be funny at some point, but not right now. So using humor wisely also involves empathy. Because humor makes light of situations. Yeah. If someone is in pain, they need to know that you hear them and feel them and empathize and get them before you start making jokes about it.
And that was a great phrase that you used, to make light of a situation. Mm. What would be another way that we could say that, to make light of something?
To treat it not seriously.
I wouldn't really call myself somebody who's a great comedian or joke teller, but I know just from watching famous comedians that timing is critical.
What's the secret to a great joke? Timing. What's the secret to a great joke? Timing.
Nice.
Learning a second language at my age, I've become so impressed with anyone who speaks English with an accent, no matter at what level.
Yeah. And I think another point, if it's not your first language and you're in a situation where you feel there could be a time and a place for a joke or a dad joke, I think transition moments are really useful. Like when you're shifting topics, when you're wrapping up a point, or even when you're noticing low energy in a meeting, these are perfect moments for inserting something light. As an English communication coach, I would also encourage people to use clear pronunciation, not to be overly focused on it, but make sure that you're not speaking too quickly and that you really truly understand the intonations. And also, I think practice difficult words in the punchline. If you've got a punchline, just make sure that that part is really solid. And of course, facial expressions, I think, can help.
Yeah, I don't want people to think that they have to come from a position of deficit or a position of weakness. That being a speaker, a non-original speaker of a language often gives you insights into that language. And do you remember Victor Borgia?
Sure. My parents used to watch him all the time.
Yeah. He was a very accomplished classical musician, and also he was a comedian. So at one point, he's at the piano and he gets up and he says, "I can't stand sitting." And gradually people start chuckling and laughing. And he says, "It's your language. I'm just using it."
I notice this sometimes in social media when I'm looking at jokes. People are laughing at their joke before they've even given the punchline. And I think generally speaking, it's a good idea to not laugh until after people react in general.
Although if you're like giggling while you're like, there's also charm. But again, it's being yourself. It's not trying to put on an act.
And in the punchline, sometimes it's good to slow down or, as I said earlier, just to be really clear with your pronunciation. So here's a really stupid dad joke. If I say, "How does coffee file a report?" It espressos itself.
Mm.
Kind of a silly joke. But again, you'd really have to wait and linger on that word espressos itself just to make sure that people get that. What mindset shift helps leaders feel more confident experimenting with humor?
I think it's the shift of wanting to connect with other people in a positive way. So we're not trying to be the center of attention. We're not trying to impress other people. We're not trying to win points. We're trying to be helpful, kind, friendly, and to create the kind of environment where people can do their best work, where they feel included, where they feel like what they're doing matters, and where they're surrounded by people who value them. I think that's where humor can play a very positive role.
And what about making what we're saying more memorable? It's not just about breaking the tension or making people laugh, but there is something about making yourself more memorable from that experience too, right?
Yeah. Well, people remember how you made them feel, but some people remember jokes. I have a brain that can forget most things, but I will remember the two jokes you told me when we met for coffee at such and such a place. I'll file those away, you know, jokes that I associate with certain people and remembering when they told them, how they told them. So if you want to watch a masterful joke teller, look for a guy named Norm MacDonald. Go watch some clips of him telling jokes, because he'll tell a joke for 10 minutes and he'll tell it as a story. And it's utterly disarming and brilliant. By the time you get to the punchline, you've already had so much fun that he's got your attention all the way through. And a TV show that I think does a wonderful job of showing how humor can help a team is Ted Lasso.
Yes, brilliant show.
Yeah, the jokes that Ted tells, they're very strategic. When he's in a locker room trying to make a really serious point, he'll tell a story about his teacher that he had a crush on when he was 9 years old, or the little boy who used to put dog poo in Snickers wrappers. So he got everyone on the team smiling and laughing, or they're getting ready for a big game. And he says, "We're going to embrace communism." And everyone looks at him shocked. And he says, "Rom communism," for like rom-coms. Like when you think things are bad, they're always going to get better in romantic comedies. So he's constantly using dad jokes, plays on words to lighten and empower.
And do you think that kind of signals confidence and emotional intelligence as well?
I think there are studies that show that people who are funny are perceived as more intelligent. And in terms of confidence, because you mentioned earlier self-deprecating humor, that doesn't work if you are truly self-deprecating. So to be able to tell on yourself, to tell a joke about a silly thing you did, actually can signal confidence that you're not being defensive. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to hide.
And when we think of the term synchrony, when people can have their emotional states aligned, when people laugh together, you're kind of aligning the emotional state of the room. And suddenly things like collaboration, or maybe the dry contents of a data-driven meeting, the experience of everybody can be more aligned together.
There are studies around to boost creativity. Go watch a Steve Martin stand-up set, or George Carlin, or Sarah Silverman.
I wouldn't watch Sarah Silverman with my grandmother in the room, but she's very funny.
Yeah, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler.
All right. So I think what we can do is jump ahead and maybe go to the vocabulary section. The first one, to read the room, which really just means to understand the atmosphere in the room.
And I think this guy is Canadian, Tim Robinson. He had a show called I Think You Should Leave Now. And he was a master of not reading the room. It's like all of the comedy came from him responding completely inappropriately to every situation. I don't know anyone who does it better.
And what about groan-worthy? Do you want to try that one?
Anything worthy deserves the thing. So groan-worthy joke deserves a groan, which is to say, okay, it amused me, but it's really not that funny.
And then for the next one, the punchline. So the part of a joke that really makes it funny, we often talk about that as the punchline. And synchrony, we already talked about. So this is the emotional alignment between people. And what about cultural fluency?
If I'm being fluent in a language, I'm speaking the language properly, but cultural fluency means that I'm speaking the culture fluently, that I'm responding properly to unspoken expectations of how we behave in this place. What gets rewarded, what gets punished, what gets tolerated.
Awesome. And self-deprecating, which we've already spoken about a couple of times, but this is really just to make fun of yourself in a lighthearted way, not in a way that is negative or it makes you feel like you're less than. But as you mentioned earlier, Howie, usually self-deprecating humor is not really coming from a place of genuine self-deprecation.
Although right? It can.
It could.
And I have been accused of that in my life, of leaning into it a little too heavily. I think you can self-deprecate in a way that's not necessarily lighthearted or useful. So think of it as a spice rather than a dish.
Good analogy.
So I'm going to present our challenge of the week to find a dad joke you like, practice it, and then use it. Use it with friends, use it in the break room, watch how the room reacts and how you feel. And hit us up in the comments. Let us know how it went for you.
Please subscribe and share the Fluent Edge podcast with friends or colleagues who might be working on their English or leadership communication. And if you're looking for support beyond this podcast, we've each opened up a few spots for one-on-one coaching. Howie helps professionals avoid burnout, lead with purpose, and shift their mindset for sustainable success.
If you're focused on English clarity, global presence, or confident communication, book a free discovery call with Sean to explore how the two of you can sharpen your voice and impact together. And remember, even if your jokes fall flat, don't worry. They're still technically dad jokes, even if nobody's laughing. In fact, that might be the hallmark of a dad joke, that they work even when they don't.
And also remember that a good dad joke may make people groan, but a great dad joke makes them laugh at the groan. So stay punny, my friends. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Take care.